Upanishad says that Om is like a needle that pierces through every single scripture, including the Vedas. So it's the earliest Veda. So it's very powerful. As you can see, that Om is there in every single mantra that you have. You start off with Om and then only whatever it is. Om Krishna, Inma, Om Kama. So therefore that Om has to be chanted loud and long, and you listen to it, because that itself is part of meditation.
Sahanavavattu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavid Vishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnu, Gurur Devo Maheshwarah, Gurureva Parabrahma, Tasmay Shri Gurave Namaha.
So, let us talk today about about meditation and about the Gayatri Mantra in particular. You know, our Pujya Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda said that the beginning of every journey into meditation must start with contemplation. Contemplation on a mantra or a shloka or a mahavakya. Mahavakya means great utterance. You may have heard some of them. Some of them is called, right? One of them is Tat Tvam Asi, that thou art. And this is a great utterance given by a sage to a disciple to let him know that truth that is all pervading is nothing but yourself. Tat Tvam Asi. And that's what this means. This is the truth. This is what you think you are. And when you separate this from your body, your mind, and your intellect, and you attach it to this, that's the right thing. So it's saying detach from these three and attach to this. Okay? There itself you have, there is a whole philosophy of meditation. Okay? Because everything is detach and attach. You detach from the lower, attach to the higher. And the only thing is, what is the technique of detaching from the lower and attaching to the higher? So that's what we are trying to explore. Okay. So this is called, this one of these things is called, what I was saying is, this last thing is a Mahavakya. Mahavakya is great utterance by the sages to their disciples. And those were, you know, just very small statements. But those statements were so powerful because it penetrates into the truth directly. So you listen to it, and if your mind is at that level, then immediately you get it. You know, our Gurudev used to say, Swami Chinmayananda used to say, when he talked to an audience, he said, if you give me your mind, I'll bring it up to the level where not only your listening part will be completed, but even your reflection will be completed. He said, Sharanam and Mananam. Mananam means reflecting on the truth that you heard. Because, you know, it has to become your knowledge. I can say what I want, but if you haven't digested the information, if it hasn't become part of you, then it's not complete. So this is the idea, okay? So either a mantra or a shloka. So the deep contemplation on this mantra can lead to a state of meditation. And I'll give you some examples, very beautiful, very simple things there are that you can contemplate on. From the Gita also, Lord Krishna says, there's a statement in there which takes you from contemplation into meditation. Very nice. So, Swami Shivananda, who was our Gurudev's first guru, Swami Chinmayananda's first guru, he said that the word mantra itself means, it comes from the Sanskrit word, mananat iti trayate, that which helps you transcend the mind. Okay? Or that which also, by constant reflection of which, one is protected or released from the round of births and deaths. So that's what mantra is, the definition of mantra itself. Okay, because we should start with the definition of mantra before we say Gayatri mantra, right? So I started off with the basic stuff. So here, so we move on, and now we come to the Gayatri mantra. What is so big about this? You know, I already told you yesterday, day before yesterday, I talked about, 3 days ago, sorry, I talked about the Om. And the Omkar is such a powerful mantra. I told you, as I told you even at the beginning here, that Om percolates through every single mantra, including the Gayatri mantra, because it starts with Om. Bhur Bhuvasva, Tat Savitarvaranyam, and so on, right? Okay, so this Gayatri mantra, again, that has another beautiful definition. It says, Gayantam Triyate Iti. That which is there in all these three states, the waking state, the dream, and the deep sleep state. That which is there in the past, the present, and the future. All these three. And what does it do? It awakens the vital energy of the body. And when it does that, then all your alertness goes up. Okay, you're no longer lazy and tamasic and stuff like that. So you're all ready to take in whatever comes, right? You're ready for the contemplation process. So therefore, it rescues that. It rescues the chanter from all adverse situations that can lead you to mortality, and it helps you transcend the body, mind, intellect. Okay, so this is what Gayatri mantra is supposed to do. And originally, this was supposed to be chanted. Originally, it is directed towards the sun god, Savituhu, it's called. And this is the original deity which symbolizes the sun god. This mantra is found in the Rig Veda. And Gurudev points out the fact that this mantra is not just, directed to the sun god, but it's an appeal to the consciousness itself to unveil itself to you and come to manifest itself as pure wisdom in our life. Because right now, we know knowledge, but wisdom is not there. So therefore, in order to bring this to happen, this Gayatri mantra is a very nice, beautiful tool. So let's move on. Let us understand the meaning of the words in this Gayatri mantra. Okay. Now, if you look at the Gayatri mantra, it has a lot of things. Om Bhu, Om Bhuaha, Om Suaha, Om Mahaha, Om Janaha, Om Tapaha, Om Satyam, Om Tatsa, Vitar Varenyam, Bhargo, Devasya, Dimahe, Diyo, Yona, Prajodayat. Gurudev said, okay, don't worry about the first few things. So what do? He's saying, Tat Savitir Varenyam, Bhargo Devasya Dimehe, Diyo Yona Prajodayat. I'll tell you about the first part also, because it has also some relevance, okay? But the second part is more important because it brings you in touch with the consciousness, okay? So let us look at that second part. Let's look at the whole thing first, okay? So if it starts with Bhu, Bhuva, Swaha, it starts with three things. Swa. So these three words means the past, present, and future. And these are called Vyahritis, okay, in that language. Vyahriti comes from the word Visheshena Ahriti. That means special mystic declaration or utterance or speech or statement that refers to all these different worlds that the Gayatri mantra refers to. Bhur, Bhuva, Swa, Maha, Jana, Tapa. We won't do all those. I'm just going to do the simple first three. So what do? You invoke the Gayatri mantra as it is, and it has the power to transport you, as it says here, beyond the past, present, and future. Because it's, what we are seeking is timeless. Understand that. We are not this. The consciousness is beyond time. It is not time bound, right? It's infinite. So here, so what is this? If you look at the literal meaning of this, it says, Savituhu means divine sun. Varenyam means most excellent. Devasya means divine grace. Dhimahi means we contemplate upon. So if you put all these things together, and Dhi means intellect, Yo means who, Na means ours, Prajodayat means I am praying towards that. So the whole thing means that I am meditating, I am contemplating on that, on that divine light, this divine, in this case the sun, that has the most excellent light. That means, the light of consciousness how can you describe it? You cannot, even if you say most excellent, it's not enough. It's a light beyond lights, right? It's not the sunlight. It's brighter than billions of suns. The sunlight is just a external manifestation. But the light of consciousness that we all are is the thing that even makes that sunlight shine. Okay? So this consciousness is what we are talking about. But let us look at the first surface meaning here. Varenyam means the excellent, and then Bhargo means illumination. So we are trying to say, hey, intellect, you know, please, hey, Lord, Son, please bless my intellect with the capacity to understand, to understand that divine light. That's my own self. In short, that's what it means. Okay. So we meditate upon this auspicious godly light of the sun god, and may that heavenly light illumine the thought flow in my intellect. Now, why intellect? Because the intellect is the thing that is meditating. See, because what are the instrument you have? You need something to probe something that is beyond it. The subtlest tool that you have available is the intellect. And the intellect can only go so far. It just touches the very periphery of that thing that we call consciousness. And because of your effort, the mind becomes what we call pure. It is free of judgment, free of any pairs of opposite judgments, all these things. And such a mind is called a pure mind. And that pure mind is what attracts the consciousness. The pure intellect and mind is what attracts it, so that you will be aware of it. See, consciousness is everywhere. But for you to cognize it, you need to have, the intellect must be subtle enough to understand it. Okay, so that's what we're doing here. So who is meditating? The intellect is meditating. What is it meditating on? To start with this, right now we are talking about sun god, right? Now, understanding of Sri Krishna, in chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan says, I am the light of the sun, moon, the stars, all sources of illumination. Okay, so sun god here is only symbolic. Real illumination is the light of consciousness, as we pointed out, and the consciousness that we are. So now the question is, you know, how do we go from contemplation to meditation? Right? See, because you understand now the surface meaning of this, right? But how do we go from there to there? Okay, so here. So, you know, if you look at this, you know, there is a very nice table here. Now, Om that we talked about refers to all of existence, and it is a perceptive vibration of the cosmos and the Almighty. So it's the life itself. It's everything. Om is the total. Okay. Now, Bhur is the first one. I said Bhur, Bhuva, Swa. So Bhur means the physical world that we are. Okay. You can look at it as the body, if you like. Okay. And then Bhuva represents to the mental world, the mind. And Swa represents the intellect. Okay. So what are you doing here? You are saying you're invoking that Om, and you're invoking the Gayatri Mantra to take you beyond the body, the mind, and the intellect. In fact, Gurudev says that also, in, I think, in Tune the Intellect, Tune the Mind. In that book, he says that this, when you chant the Gayatri Mantra also, what you're doing is you're trying to go beyond the body, the mind, and the intellect. You're invoking the consciousness to help you go beyond all these three. Because what you're seeking is beyond these three. Okay, but the tool that you use is your intellect, as I pointed out. Okay, so tat suvatar varenyam, that indicates the three planes of experience. That is, now see, when you say tat means that, and when you say that, it means the consciousness, and the consciousness is associated with something called isness. The fact that it is present everywhere. Now, let me give you an example. If I take a seed and put it in the ground, the seed bursts out and a little sprout comes out, right? So the seed is no more, but the sprout is. The sprout is no more, but a plant comes out of it. So the sprout is no more, but the plant is. The plant is no more, but the bigger plant is. The bigger plant is no more, but the tree is. So in everywhere you can see the is part of it consists. It continues through. Just like you and I, when we go through our childhood and everything else, we know exactly that we were the same person when we were a little baby, when we became a toddler, when we grew up, and so on. right? So this is what we are talking about when we say Tat. Tat Savitur. So that radiant brilliance, Savitur is what? The brilliant, radiant brilliance shining forth from everywhere, bright, luminous like the sun. And it's the knowledge, okay? And then Varenyam, as I told you, means excellent, excellent light. So it's adorable, venerable, supreme. And Devasya means that divine oneness, which is intrinsically pure and brilliant, okay? And then Dhimahi means I am meditating, I am focused and absorbed on that, right? And Dhiyo Yona means I use my intellect to meditate upon that, right? Now, see, considering all this, so it's saying, O existence absolute creator of the three dimensions, we contemplate upon your divine light, may that consciousness stimulate our intellect and bestow true knowledge upon us. Or if you look at, some people look at this, the sun as a divine mother. That's why they call Gayatri Devi. So what is that? Divine mother, our hearts are filled with darkness. Make this darkness distant from us and promote illumination within us. See, everything is trying to invoke that illumination which you are, which you don't know about, right? But which you're seeking. And the only tool that you have, as I said, to seek it is your intellect. So that's what you're doing, okay? So take, now if you look at each word of this, you know, let's look at another thing here. Manusmriti. Manusmriti is the laws of Manu. Manu was a lawgiver in the olden days, right? He was one of the lawgivers of the universe. And they give a lot of beautiful single line rules. And those rules govern the universe. And if you follow those rules, you follow a life that is what we call dharmic, which maintains balance. I talked about balance the first day. Okay, so this maintains balance. So he's saying that this Manusmriti advises you to chant this mantra before sunrise in the morning for 10 times and in the evening before sundown. And you can chant it longer if you want. But self-realization can only occur when our intellect is extremely pure. So all this chanting helps purify the mind. Okay, that's what we need. Likes, dislikes, passions, lusts, emotions, all these things cloud the intellect. Yes? Yeah, I'll leave some time for questions in the end. Yeah. The Gayatri Mantra, through its power, is believed to strike down that forces that stand in our way. Okay? Right. Now, let's move on here. Yeah. So what should you do here? We should shift the attention from that which externally nourishes all life. That is, you're going from the sun and you're shifting the attention to the light of consciousness. That's what you're doing when you chant this. Okay? Om Bhur Bhuvasva Tat Savitur Vraneniam. That divine light, so you're asking that, you're invoking the light of consciousness through your intellect and asking it to bless you, to perceive that, you can't see the word perceive, but to become one with that illumination. Okay? Yes. So you had a question?
Yes, you haven't explained Prachodayat
yet. Oh, Prachodayat means I'm worshipping, I'm thinking about it. You know, like it's like a worship. Prachodayat means, yeah.
Because I don't know any Sanskrit.
I'll give you an exact meaning here. Hold on. Yes. Prachodayat means it's inspire, enlighten, and ignite. That's what it means. Okay? Because that's what you want. You're asking that divine light to inspire, enlighten, and ignite that capacity in you. Capacity to perceive. Okay? Thank you. All right. So, okay, therefore, so moving on here, this light of consciousness, how do we go from here to there? You know, as I told you, it takes the process of contemplation. So what would you do? You think about the illumination of the sun. You start off with that, with the straightforward meaning, and you take it and understand that sunlight, that like Lord Krishna says, that I am the light of all lights, the sunlight, the moonlight, the starlight, all these are nothing but Him, and He is nothing but the light of consciousness, right? So you have to move the contemplation in the direction of that consciousness. You understand? So you start off with this and move in that direction. See, that is what contemplation is. You take the simple meaning and move it deeper and deeper till you reach that state. Okay, let me give you an example of this. In chapter 7, verse 7, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that I am the string. Hey Arjuna, I am the string that I'm sorry, everything in this universe is threaded on me just like beads are on a string. Now, in the first thing you would say, wow, Lord Krishna said this, that's great, you know. So you would say, that would uplift you already. Okay, so you take that mantra, but if you look at the depth of that mantra, you can go into contemplation and move into the direction of the consciousness. Now, how do you do that? Because, first of all, you see, supposing if Lord Krishna said that he is the string and our nature is that consciousness, then we are also the string. So our real nature is the string, not the bead. What we think of ourselves is the bead, because each one of us thinks we are a bright water pearl. Another is one is a freshwater pearl. Another one is the normal pearl that you see here. Okay, or one thinks I'm a bigger and more beautiful bead than the one next to it. So we do this all around because our ego exercises itself everywhere. So what we want to do is forget that and move in the direction of the string. Okay, so already that is the first contemplative process. You go from that into the string. And then understand another thing. You know, without the string, those beads will fall apart. Huh? See, this has I will give you also a practical reason why you should think of yourself as a string. First, let us finish this. So, if you look at the string, now understand, if we are all beads on a string, supposing you take the other limit, for example, the string itself is beaded around. If the string itself was beaded, there are no more any beads. If I pull the string apart, it's nothing. If I pull it apart, there's nothing but string. So the consciousness alone is. The string alone is, not the beads. That is the truth. Right? Now, take it one more step. You know, Lord says, I am the string that goes to everything. What is that string? That string is nothing but the light of consciousness that pervades every single thing. See, so that's how you move from this ordinary meaning, which uplifts your mind because there's Lord Krishna. And then understand that Lord Krishna is that consciousness. And then move into that realm. Move into the other thing. Okay? And then what do you do from there? You stay there and you be silent. That's it. Because once you're at that level where you're contemplating on that consciousness that you are, then automatically that contemplation leads you to that level, and then you just be quiet. Lord Dakshinamurti in the Dakshinamurti Stotram, Lord Dakshinamurti, who is a form of Lord Shiva, says that he's giving a message of silence. He's talking, his message is one of silence, he's not saying anything. And he's saying that I'm not saying anything because whatever I say cannot reach that truth, which is beyond words. That is, which is beyond words, which is beyond the mind. Okay, so that again, there is another way in which you turn the mind from that contemplative, from the contemplation into that. Because see, and when you see one more thing that Lord says in that Dakshinamurti Stotram, he says that not only am I giving you this in silence, but your mind better be silent when you listen to me. Because I'm giving you a subtle truth, and that subtle truth cannot be understood unless your mind is also of that quality. So we need to make that mind in that quality and then listen with that kind of mindset to this. And then ultimately, the Lord is saying that not only that, when the book, the textbook describes the face of the Lord, that it's absorbed in that blissful experience. So he's experiencing it as he's talking about it without speaking. You see what it is? Because the words cannot explain that. But at the same time, he has to tell you what it is. So what does he do? He does the sign language. And he does this. Because he has to say something. And what is he saying? That thou art. And what is thou? Thou, it doesn't mean this. If you did this, you would be lumping the body, mind, intellect along with you. And this becomes ego. But when you detach from your body by the intellect and attach to this, it becomes chit, chin mudra. This is called chin mudra. Mudra means the sign. A sign of what? Knowledge. You know, our word, our Gurudev, Chinmayananda, comes from that. Chit means not only knowledge, but it's all consciousness. Absolute consciousness. Huh? So that is what you're doing. Okay? So this, as I telling you, as I was telling you in the beginning, I told you Mahavakya. Mahavakya, this is a great utterance. Tat Tvamasi, that you are, that thou art. So that consciousness is what everybody is. You see? So we go from here, from this meaning, to the fact that you are that. Okay? So this is how contemplation takes place. And this is the way to go it. And there are so many methods. Okay? Ramana Maharshi, from Upadesha Saram, there's another text. He also does the same thing. He also shows you a methodology where you can go from chanting loudly, softly, softly, and then into that. So you get into the contemplative, you start with the chanting, and then read, and then understand the meaning of that, and then just slip away into that realm of higher consciousness. And when you do that, again, you're absorbed in that, see? Because you have to find a way to do that, okay? In fact, this Gayatri Mantra, for example, sometimes I've seen people taking a recording of this and listening to it. Om Bhur Bhuvasvaha Tatsuvitruvrenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimihi Tiyo Yona Prajodayati. See, so even listening to the chant is so peaceful because it has that power. It is when you chant everything in according to the right meter and according to the right, if you put all the highs and the lows in there and put it and chant it correctly, it has a power. Not only the meaning has a power, but even listening to it has the power to quieten your mind. Okay, so this is the idea of the Gayatri Mantra. And there are so many mantras like this. Like I was telling you, chapter 7, verse 7, right? Okay, now let me stop here and see if you have any questions. And then we'll do some meditation also.
If somebody speaks a different language other than Sanskrit, will they still be absorbing?
Yes.
Will they still be perceptive to the vibration of the mantra?
Absolutely. It is beyond language. In fact, I talked about Om. You should have come my first day or second day. That Om has the power. There's no religious. You don't have to be religiously aligned with anything. There's no religious dogma. Nothing involved. It is just everybody. Every single being has that Om mantra. Every single being is privy to that. Everybody can chant that and still realize the truth. It doesn't matter whether you're a Catholic or a Hindu or a Muslim, whatever it is. It's irrespective of anything. See, that's why it's so powerful. It is a big deal. That Om is a big deal. You know, the Upanishad itself says that Om is like a stick. And you take that stick and put it through all the leaves. All the leaves stands for all the scriptures, starting from the Vedas. Mind you, the Vedas are the oldest religious scripture. So this goes through all that. It threads through all that. So the Om is very, very powerful. That is the reason why it is chanted in every single thing. It starts with an Om. When I do puja for the Lord, I start with Om. When I do a havan or a homa, I start with Om. Every single thing starts with Om. Any meditation thing starts with Om. You know what I'm saying? It's so powerful. So you know, in India, actually, a child, a Hindu boy, gets initiated, if you look at that book in what you sent me, is initiated with mantra very early in the life. And this ceremony, a thread ceremony, it's called Upanayana. They invest him with the sacred thread. And the sacred thread is as if when he is invested with the sacred thread, they initiate him into the Gayatri mantra. Why is that? Because it is considered that person is the is born for the second time in a very spiritual, with a very spiritual fervor in him. The first time is just a regular birth. But when you initiate them, it's considered a spiritual birth. Birth of the spirituality in that person. See, and why is that? Because the people who chant it, they are not ordinary people. They know what they're doing and they chant that mantra with dedication and love. And then they give it to you. And when you chant it and you put all those things in there, you will also understand that there is a deep meaning in it. Okay, so whenever you do Gayatri mantra and all that, you practice it in your house, you see it makes a difference. It really vitalizes you. So I'm going to give you two techniques, two methodologies to do the meditation. Okay, one I already explained to you how the Gayatri thing is done. Now I'm going to give you two more. Okay, so let's close our eyes, chant three ohms. Now, also, I'm sure you have heard from Anil that about the posture in meditation and all that. In fact, the Kaivalya Upanishad says, "Vivikta deshecha sukha sanasta sukam." Shuka sharira shiraha. Head, neck and trunk has been a straight line when you sit down, so don't sit very way. And also be comfortable wherever you sit. It says not to sit too high, not to sit too low. And then when you look at something, don't let your head fall. Sri Krishna says in chapter 6 of Gita, he says that let your gaze fall above the level of the nose. Why is that? Because if I do that, I'm not going to do that. See, there is a technique for all these things and there is a meaning for all these things. So all these things are methodologies to make you sit correctly. And they tell you to choose a very nice place, and there's no better place than this because there's a meditation room and you're having so many classes here, so it's very nice. It's the right atmosphere. Okay, so let us do one thing. I'm going to chant Om three times, and then after we chant Om, I'm going to chant it with me, and then also I will come down in the intensity of the chanting and slowly go softer and softer. You chant it in your mouth, chant it with your mind, chant it loud, chant it soft, chant it with your mouth, and then chant it in your mind. And then let it just go in your mind and run in your mind, and then I will take you through a contemplation process. Okay. And all the while, remember the power of that. You keep that in mind, that the Om is such a powerful mantra. Therefore, I am going to get something out of it. Have some faith and some confidence, okay? Om. Please chant it with me, loud and long. With this relatively quiet mind, let us go through this contemplation exercise. We are sitting in this room at the Bakersfield Chinmaya Center. Imagine that the walls of this room are removed. You are then in the Bakersfield Chinmaya Center. Let us remove the walls of the center. And you are in Bakersfield. Let us transcend the boundary of Bakersfield. And then you're in California, say. And when we remove the state boundary, California, see that you're in the US. Take that away as well. And you are part of this world, part of this earth. This earth has five major components. The ground, which is the earth that we know, water that's present in the oceans, the fire element which comes from the sun and the heat in the ground, the air that's around us, the atmosphere, and the space in which the earth rests. Earth, water, fire, air, and space. Sounds very familiar because your body, your mind, and intellect are also made of the same five elements. So if you sat in a place and looked at all those elements outside as external to you, ask yourself, who am I? Because the earth, water, fire, air, and space elements in you are nothing but an extension of the outside. Or the outside is an extension of all the elements in you. If you take all these away, ask yourself, then who am I? I am not these five elements, I am not the physical body, I am not the mind, and not the intellect. Because the mind and intellect is also made up of the subtle part of these five elements. Therefore, the only thing left is the real me, the consciousness that I am. Let us stay in that knowledge for a few minutes. while we are, our mind is quiet, let me just go to the second technique, just to give you an idea of what it is. Again, chant Om quietly, and I'll go through the dialogue. Please listen carefully, and then get into that quiet state again. I am trying to seek out the absolute truth, the truth that is my own self. And I'm looking at the universe to see where I can find it. The truth, if it is absolute truth, can never stop existing. It has to exist through all the realms of time, past, present, future. If that's not the case, then it's not absolute truth. And the truth should be all-pervading. It should be in every being, every animal, every tree, every single bug, every single human being. But the best type of life form to study is a human being, because we know ourselves better than we know the animals. So let us see. Every day we go through a waking state, a dream, and a sleep state. Is any one of these states considered the truth? Let us put it to the test. During my waking state, my body, my mind and my intellect are all awake. And I do a lot of actions. I go to work, I come back. In my dream, I have a separate world. And when I go to deep sleep, I have a separate world. The waking and the dreaming states, dream states, are totally independent of each other, because I cannot transact business between the waking and the dream or the deep sleep. They all seem independent. If I'm searching for truth, it has to be, it's not the waking state, because then it doesn't stay only there. It's not there throughout. In other words, the waking and the dream and the deep sleep state, as I said, we cannot transact business between them. I cannot win a lottery ticket in the dream and expect to get it in the waking state. And the waker does not know the dreamer, and the dreamer does not know the deep sleeper, and so on. Yet, when I wake up in the morning, I know that I am the same person who was awake during the day, who had a dream, and who went into the sleep state. There is a continuity of experience. although each of those guys in each state does not know each other, yet there is someone who knows these three states. Is the witness. And the witness is the real me, the truth. And the scriptures say that what you need to do is to understand that that same witness is the consciousness that is present everywhere. In fact, when we said that thou art, the thou refers to that witness. That is what is spoken of in that mantra, that that witnessing consciousness is nothing but that supreme state. So what does this tell us? Tell us that we should not look at ourselves as the physical body, mind, and intellect, because all these are not the witnessing consciousness. Neither are physical body, nor the subtle body, nor the causal body. Or neither the body, the mind, the intellect, or the one that is in deep sleep. None of these is you, but the witness of all these is a consciousness which is you. You see, in both these states of meditation, you are negating what you are not and asserting what you are. And that is the process in any meditation. In the Vedanta books, they talk about neti neti, na iti na iti. I am not that, I am not that. So that goes to say, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not the intellect, I am not the waking state, I am not the dream state, I am not the deep sleep state. But I am the witness consciousness, witnessing consciousness. And the witness consciousness is nothing but the self. And I need to turn my attention and realize that that witness consciousness is nothing but that universal supreme self. I know it by logic. Now I have to take that one step further and contemplate and try to reach and try to realize that truth. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.